We're here with Joe Miller, Director of Choral Activities at Westminster Choir College. This is an exciting concert.
It is a very exciting concert, one of my favorite works in the repertoire.
Where does this work fit within the choral repertoire? Is this one of those must-sing pieces for choirs?
Absolutely. It's a B minor mass, a St. Matthew Passion, a Verdi Requiem, Mozart C minor masses in that league, and incredibly well-respected in the repertoire.
In this particular piece, I understand when he was writing this, was looking back towards Bach and Handel, and also infusing it with his own lyrical tendencies towards opera. Do you consider the history when you're teaching singers how to sing it?
Absolutely. Because it was a gift, you know, it was something his father Leopold wanted him to do, and then they had this kind of votive mass that he's written for his wife. There's a lot of care that was taken, and he was looking back. So we talk about that when we prepare it, but really I keep it in my mind when I'm preparing the type of articulation. For instance, in this work are two of Mozart's greatest examples of fugue. The end of the Gloria is the Cum Sancto Spiritu, this wonderful big double fugue, and you know, it begins and you go, wow, this could have been written by Bach. And I think that Mozart did have that. You know, he was aware of, certainly, of Bach's music, and you can tell in the care that he took about it. You know, when we prepare something by Handel, he didn't always take the care with this kind of the letter of the law when it came to things like fugal writing. But Mozart, in this case, writes the most epic grand fugue that he wrote in this piece, in the Cum Sancto. He does the entire thing as a double fugue, and then he flips it on his head, and you'll hear the tenors call out, Cum Sancto, this big bell tones that reverse the theme. It's just a very exciting, and the whole fugue kind of lifts you up to the beginning. Then he writes another one in the Sanctus and Benedictus, the Osana fugue. And not only is it is a double fugue for double choir, and it's ecstatic.
So explain what a double choir, what that means.
In a typical fugal process, you would have a theme that was introduced in each voice and a compositional process that a composer would follow. And in a double fugue, not just juggling one set of balls, they take another theme and also give that to each voice and develop it. So you have two things being developed at the same time.
So are there certain features of this work that introduce choral singers to things that they won't learn anywhere else?
I think we certainly see that a lot in the solo writing. Those that are familiar with the great Mozart arias like Come Scoglio will hear that kind of writing in the Laudamus Te. So there is a lot of extended use of very, very wide range for the soloist, especially the two sopranos. Their wonderful passing of high B naturals and A's, how they pass notes, high notes back and forth. Those are new kind of innovative features of the piece. But the thing that, I don't know that there's anything particularly innovative, but it is the dramatic treatment of the text. For instance, in the Kyrie, as we begin these great arpeggiations in C minor, those are real pinnacle footprints of the piece. And the use of incredible melodies also, like we find in the Kyrie.
And I've heard this called a cantata mass. What does that mean?
A cantata mass is when you take all the separate parts. For instance, the Gloria has separate parts that the text is broken into. And when the composer sets each of those texts in a different movement, that's called a cantata mass. In earlier masses, those would all be in one movement. They might have separate sections, but it would be one movement. And when the composer gives them all separate movements, that's a cantata mass.
And in the Gloria, the chorus and the soloists alternate.
That's right. It gives the composer greater flexibility to express the text, because sometimes in these great texts, they are more personal, and the composer might set one of those movements by an individual voice. And sometimes, like the opening movement, Gloria in Excelsis, this big exclamation, then it's appropriate, of course, to set it for the entire forces.
So with all of these other parts to the eventual performance, the soloists and the orchestra and Yannick's conducting, do you have to instruct the singers in the choir to respond in different ways depending on how the singers and the orchestra respond?
Yes, I mean, that's philosophy certainly that I try to convey and to train the choir to do, is that when they are on stage or for performance like this, that they're engaged in everything. So if it is an orchestral movement alone or soprano movement, that they should react and be engaged as if they were singing it, so that there is a narrative to it. Because the Mass in itself, and especially the way Mozart has set it, there is a great narrative to the piece.
It's pretty exciting. And the fact that it's unfinished, does that affect how you present it?
Well, I think the music demands so much of you. C minor Mass is a great demand on the choir, emotionally and vocally on the choir. And I think you want them to feel like they have given everything they can give to the entire piece. Because, I mean, that's one of the things you could consider about the work being unfinished. It's just, how could it go any further? You know, it is already at this great dramatic peak. How could you write, you know, three more sections, three more, movements of it? I mean, because it's already gone almost as far as it can go.
Wow. Well, it's really exciting. We can't wait to hear it. Thank you so much, Joe Miller.
Thank you.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.